Hi everyone, and welcome to the sixth and final episode of season three of the Burgess Salmon Pensions Pod. My name's Helen Cracknell and I'm an associate in Burgess Salmon's pensions team. In today's episode, we'll be discussing the pensions changes arising from the recent spring budget. I'm also joined today by regular host Chris Brown and Emily Fox, my current pensions trainee. Hi both.
Hi Helen.
Hi Helen.
Our guest today is Katrin Young, our pensions team's practice development lawyer. Katrin, welcome back to the podcast.
Thanks very much. Thanks for having me.
So Katrin, the Chancellor of the Exchequer presented his spring budget 2023 to Parliament on the 15th of March, and it was probably the biggest budget for pensions tax changes that we've had for years. And we'll talk about what's in it, but it was hotly trailed in the press, especially over the weekend leading up to the 15th of March. So I thought we could start by talking about what were we expecting before the budget?
Yes, so I think the Daily Mail ended up with a scoop on this one. So yeah. It was all in the press the weekend before, basically saying that the Chancellor was expected to increase the annual allowance and to increase the lifetime allowance from just over the million pounds that it's currently at. So there was sort of lots of talk about that. And in fact, he'd already given some tips, really, because he'd stood up and delivered a big speech to Bloomberg on the 27th of January and basically said that, you know, he was trying to get people back into work, back to paying tax, particularly highly paid professionals in the NHS, and that they were looking at the conditions necessary to make work worthwhile. And it's been a big issue in the NHS for a long time, really, with lots of senior doctors and consultants leaving because they were experiencing issues with lifetime allowance and you know, were just retiring. So so we knew quite a lot of what was coming. And in fact, I started writing our blog on it in the morning before the announcement came because I knew what was sort of being trailed. Right. Watched the budget and then quickly hopped onto the laptop in the afternoon to finish off what the actual announcements were.
And of course, the most significant announcement was the abolition of the lifetime allowance as opposed to its increase. What's the detail on that?
Yes, so that was the bit that was a bit, you know, they obviously always like to have a rabbit out of the hat when they're stood up delivering the budget. So I think he said something like...
Yeah, go on. Yeah, that's it. We've probably got the same quote. Go on, Katrin. Yeah,
I think he said something like, well, you know, I'm going to be asked to increase the lifetime allowance, but I'm going to go one step further and abolish it altogether. And that's lots it. Of cheering. So basically, what they've done immediately is from the 6th of April 2023, they've confirmed that no individual will incur a lifetime allowance charge. However, administrators are still going to have to operate lifetime allowance checks when paying benefits, for example, for assessing whether an individual has available lifetime allowance and issue benefit crystallisation event statements. And then next year, from 6th of April 2024, they're actually going to legislate to remove the lifetime allowance from legislation altogether. And the reason I think they're delaying that is that there are references to the lifetime allowance in quite a lot of unexpected places throughout the dearth of pensions legislation. So, for example, there is an exception in the automatic enrolment regulations that says that if employers have reasonable cause to believe that a member has protection from a lifetime allowance, then they don't have to automatically enrol them into a qualifying pension scheme. Instead, it's a discretion as to whether to do that. So, you know, they can't just... Sorry.
No, sorry, I'm interrupting. But I suppose now with the changes, some members might opt in where they had to, you know, would have decided not to have done so before.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, some of the details come out since the budget last Thursday. So on Friday, we had HMRC publish Pension Schemes Newsletter 148. Mm-hmm. And there were sort of some residual questions about how it will work with protections, etc. But the newsletter did say this point about the fact that, you know, nobody's going to be subject to a charge. And anybody who currently has protection can now save into a pension scheme, can transfer to an alternative arrangement, or, you know, can basically continue saving for their retirement without suffering that charge going forward. So we have had some clarification on those points since.
So you mentioned the lifetime allowance protections. Is it still worthwhile members having those? We obviously advise a lot in our jobs about people who have protections and making sure that trustees check with their members whether they do have these. But has that all fallen away, or are there still some merit in the protections and some changes that will affect them?
Yeah, no, that's an interesting one, Helen, because, again, that was something that didn't come clear until we had the newsletter last Friday. But basically, the position is at the moment is that those with enhanced protection or fixed protection can lose that protection if they have further accrual or make impermissible transfers. As I said, from the 6th of April, that no longer applies. So if you're doing any of those things after that date, that's fine.
Yeah.
But the main advantage of retaining any existing protections is that you still get any higher right you might have to a pension commencement lump sum. So one of the sort of stings in the tail of the increase, or the removal, I should say, of the lifetime allowance is that the Chancellor did decide to freeze the current 25% tax-free cash at its current levels. So at the moment, the current lifetime allowance is $1,073,100. So they have confirmed that the maximum pension commencement lump sum for those without protection will remain at 25% of that current lifetime allowance, so $268,275. So that's interesting. So that, for example, if you are an individual with fixed protection 2012, so you have a protected lifetime allowance of 1.5 million, then you will still be able to retain that maximum lump sum of 375,000. So yes, basically, people in that position can get the best of both worlds, at least for the time being.
And I suppose the fact that the pension commencement lump sum has effectively been capped means that that's opened the door now for future governments to maybe tinker with it, and you know, and as we go through time, I suppose the pool of people who might potentially be hit by that cap if it doesn't move is going to grow.
I think that's a really interesting development, Chris. I mean, it's the first time that any Chancellor has really put their hands on the tax-free cash, which is a huge benefit to everybody. So now that we've got a figure that's going to be hardwired into legislation, it does open the door to tinker with that figure going forward. So, I think that's going to be an interesting development.
And it hasn't received much press attention, which is interesting as well.
Yeah, certainly initially, I think that detail was overlooked, and much of the sort of press since has been more focused on the impact on death benefits. I think that one is definitely quite a significant change. And there was some hints in the press beforehand that one of the things they could look to do is to sort of reduce the amount of pension commencement lump sum that people could have. So it certainly was something that was trailed, but I don't think anybody really thought they would go there. But there we are.
But haven't Labour already committed to reverse the abolition of the lifetime allowance if they win the next election?
Yes, I think they came out very much the next day and said it's a change that benefits the richest in society. And if we win the next election, we will reverse it, which is interesting. I mean, if you look at the costings to the budget, this one is actually the one that costs the least out of all the other announcements that were made. And because it doesn't affect the vast majority of people, Labour are correct on that point. But also because, of course, it was a Labour government that initially increased the lifetime allowance to the 1.8 million mark that it sat at before the coalition reduced it back down again starting 2012. So, I mean, you know, the death bits, I think, might be an area which Labour may wish to look at again, because the fact that the government have now confirmed that from the 6th of April, nobody will be paying a lifetime allowance charge, what that means is that currently, if you've got more than your lifetime allowance saved in a pension scheme and you turn 75, there is an imposed forced lifetime allowance charge on reaching 75 and you pay that tax. Now, that's not going to be the case. So people might use it as a means of saving on inheritance tax, because pension savings is not subject to inheritance tax. So you get the tax relief on contributions going in, you're no longer paying a lifetime allowance charge, and you can pass it on to your dependents when you die without paying any tax. So whether they will look to do something around that, or if they will look to reverse and reintroduce some sort of lifetime allowance again, is the question. And of course, it makes it really difficult, I think, for people to plan, and try and sort of max their savings now, not knowing if that's going to last beyond 2 years.
It makes you wonder if the answer to sort of tax implications on pension savings, because they're such a, because they're around for the long term, is just to take it out of party politics and immediate economic drivers and that sort of thing, and to have it governed by a cross-party group.
People need certainty. You know, if they don't want individuals falling back on the state in retirement, then, you know, we need to be able to know what the tax rules are, not just now, but into the future. So it really shouldn't be a political hot potato, but we all know that that's not been the case to date. It is going to be interesting, I think, over the next couple of years to see whether this change is going to achieve the policy objective that the government is hoping it will. Mm-hmm. So they've said, obviously, it's to encourage professional mid to high earners to stay and to return to work, pay more tax, grow the economy. And the figures are really, really scary, actually. So there's been a report from the Resolution Foundation back in February, which shows that economic inactivity amongst all adults has risen by 830,000 since the start of the pandemic, and 76% of those are amongst people age 50 plus. And the amount of those people are disproportionately coming from high-paying professional jobs. So, there is an issue that needs to be addressed, and if it works, and those people are coming back into the workforce and paying more tax because they're good earners, and doing key jobs that we need to grow our economy, then, what will Labour do? Will they then want to try and put the brakes on again? So I think it's going to be interesting times. Yeah, go on, Helen. Yeah,
I was going to say I think it will be something that we just have to wait and see if it does achieve the policy objective. But I certainly have people in my life who, for example, are retired GPs, and I don't think once you've decided to retire and taken the time, you will enter the workforce just because of this. But I don't know. It'll be very different depending on different individual circumstances.
Yeah, I think you're right there. I mean, I know both the Chancellor and Liam Fox, who's the MP for North Somerset, have said that they've spoken to people immediately after the budget in the NHS who've recently retired, who've said they will go back. But as you say, there's quite a lot of talk about, well, once you've made that decision and you've retired and you're on the golf course or, going off travelling, then are you really going to go back to work? So, and also, of course, if you've already retired and you used all your lifetime allowance when you first accessed your benefits, then you're stuck. You don't get any further lifetime allowance under the current tax regime. So again, unless the finance bill that's due tomorrow is going to do anything about that, I'm not convinced it's going to help getting those who've made that decision back into work. But where it might help, I think, is people who are coming up to retirement or are thinking of retiring in the next 5 to 10 years, who might now decide to stay a bit longer, pay a bit more into their pensions, work a few more hours, and, try and boost things so they get a better income in retirement when they eventually do retire.
So recent retirees and those people not far behind them, there's lots to think about. What about sort of our employer clients and trustees of pension schemes? What should they be thinking about, because of the changes and the removal of the lifetime allowance?
Yeah, so we've already got quite a few clients who have high earning members of staff who would have previously, you know, been subject to issues with the lifetime allowance and annual allowance. And they've basically decided to opt out of any pension contributions, automatic enrolment and otherwise. And they've made individual deals with those employees to pay them what they would have had as pension contributions as cash or bonus. So now that there is no lifetime restriction on pension savings, then they might want to speak to those employees again and say, right, well, do we want to unwind that agreement? Do you now want the money into your pension? Do you want to sacrifice salary and bonuses? Because, of course, then you don't pay employers income tax and national insurance contributions on the pension payments going in. So that's definitely one point for employers to start thinking about. The other one is quite a lot of employers will have set up accepted life schemes for employees who face lifetime allowance issues. So these are unregistered schemes that shelter lump sums on death. And they've basically been sheltered outside of the registered scheme tax regime so that they can provide those benefits. And again, if the policy remains permanent, then those schemes may no longer be necessary in future, and you can shelter them under your existing registered pension and life assurance arrangements.
They shouldn't fall away, those arrangements, will they? So the question might be, do employers who have them take steps to unwind them?
So I mean, they should still work. You're absolutely right, Chris. Quite a lot of them are written to automatically terminate on 10 years of commencement, and that's to avoid other tax charges, periodic charges. So maybe they can just be left to lapse at that point, or, you know, or there should be provision in the rules to discontinue them earlier than that if employers want to. So that's sort of on the employer side. On the trustee side, a good news story, we hope, is as a result of all of this, is that any trustees who are currently going through GMP equalisation and are looking to achieve that by way of conversion, this might actually make things a bit easier, because anything that helps with GMP equalisation. Absolutely. So at the moment, you know, there was concern that if you provide an uplift as part of a conversion exercise, that might lead to some members with protections losing that protection. Also, another big issue has been the deferred member carve out. So that exempts certain increases to deferred pensions from an annual allowance test, but only up to a point. So that has meant that some trustees have decided not to convert deferred members until retirement. So with the increase in annual allowance, which was also announced, making the deferred member carve out less of an issue, it might now be easier for some schemes to use GMP conversion for deferreds as well. So lots to think about, but hopefully a good news story, that one.
And just a very general point, with all of this going on, trustees might want to swat up to make sure that they can deal with any, if there are any queries from members, I suppose. Although I guess most queries will come from high earners who have protections. But,
They might. They're definitely, I think any high earner will probably want to go and see an IFA to assess what they want to do in as a result of the changes. And I think the IFAs are already gearing up to ensure they're set for the deluge of new work.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we've spoken a bit about the lifetime allowance changes as the most significant announcement. But what else is there in the budget?
Yes. So some of the other items which perhaps have had a bit less attention, one I've already mentioned. So the annual allowance, which is the amount that individuals can pay in each tax year effectively into their pension arrangement, that's gone up from 40,000 to 60,000. So and then some of the other types of annual allowances that we've got. So the money purchase allowance, which applies if members have flexibly accessed their DC savings at age 55 or above, that's gone up from 4,000 to 10,000, which again, I think is long overdue. Quite a lot of members during the pandemic would have partially retired, but want to go back to work and do something. But this has perhaps restricted them from making further pension savings, so that's going to help them. Mm. And the other one is the tapered annual allowance. So this is basically where at the moment your annual allowance of 40,000 reduces once you earn over £240,000 a year. And you currently don't, you only get a an annual allowance of 4,000 once you earn over £312,000 a year. So those have been increased as well. So basically now members can earn over £260,000 a year before they get a reduction in their normal annual allowance. And you don't, you'll only get, you'll get a an increased low annual allowance of £10,000 a year if you earn over £360,000. So that's better. But again, I think that's quite an interesting policy change, because you might get people who are sort of close to earning £260,000 or just above, who might decide to partially retire, reducing their savings below £260,000 so that they can still continue to save £60,000 a year as opposed to, you know, less than that or whatever. Mm. So yeah, again, that might not achieve the objective that the Chancellor is looking for of making sure those people stay in work and pay as much tax as possible.
And Catherine, there are a few other fringe announcements in the budget. I know the government said that they were going to expand and improve their midlife MOT tool. Could you tell our listeners a bit more about that and the other changes?
Yes, that's right, Helen. So basically, there's currently the midlife MOT, which I don't think is very well known about, and certainly hasn't been people making use of it. So it's currently available if you're in your 40s, 50s and 60s and you need a bit of guidance as to what your options are to ensure that you've got decent income in retirement. So there's going to be greater investment in that to help individuals with planning. So more advisors available and promotion of that service. Some of the other bits and pieces that were in there, which we were expecting. So net, if you currently are a low earner and you make your pension contributions under a net pay arrangement, so your total taxable income is less than your personal allowance of £12,500, then you're currently not getting the 20% tax relief on any pension contributions you make in, because they're not automatically deducted by your pensions provider under a net pay arrangement. So the government basically saying that HMRC will now top up those payments. So that's been headlined for a while, and that's going to be legislated for. And then as sort of tinkering to collective DC schemes in wind-up. Obviously, we don't have many of those at the moment. We've currently only got Royal Mail, but there is a consultation ongoing to extend it to multi-employers. So there's a technical change to ensure that even where they're winding up, they can continue to receive authorised pension payments and can make transfers out, etc., to other schemes. And then in the public service scheme, because they've obviously changed their pension arrangements back in 2012 and they've had sort of legacy public sector schemes, there's a technical change there as well to make sure that those two, legacy scheme and their new one, will be linked for the purposes of calculating annual allowance charges. So, that's pretty much what was in there. But pensions are definitely becoming far more newsworthy at the moment with this and the LDI crisis last autumn. We're hitting the Daily Mail. So what more can you ask for?
And by the time this pod goes out, so we usually record about a week before it's published, we'll have had the changes to the Finance Act, you were saying, Catherine. Is that expected?
Yes. So Finance Bill 2023 is expected on the 23rd of March. So hopefully that'll have some more of the detail on some of these points. So as and when we've digested it, we'll be publishing a further briefing on that, no doubt.
Super.
Perfect. Thanks so much, Catherine, for coming on the podcast and imparting your wisdom on the budget on us and our listeners.
No problem at all. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to the Burgessan Pensions Pod. That was our last episode of our Season 3, but we'll be back again in the autumn for Season 4. If you'd like to know more about our pensions team and how our experts can work with you, you can contact myself or Chris or any of our team via our website. All of our existing episodes are available on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Don't forget to subscribe, and thanks for listening.